Hi, this is Greg Cook, and answering another question that's come to us via our website and email. And like I said, I handpick these. There's no way I could answer all of them, but I try to answer questions that are very conceptually correct, well-formulated questions that may tap on something and give me an opportunity to make a point. What I like to do is answer the questions that go above and beyond the reference and ask for better practical clarity. And so I'm committed to answering those questions first. The other questions come in waves, and I hate to be the person saying you need to go buy a product, but I mean that's sort of why we went through the trouble to shoot the video, and we give up the weekends to write the books and articles. Here's the question: when you're training or rehabbing an athlete or patient using the functional movement screen, you know, as discharge criteria, we're trying to screen out everything. We're not just trying to fix the ankle. In a rehab situation, you get the ankle fixed, you might find out that this athlete's lost their squatting and lunging pattern. So even though the ankle is good, I mean, insurance is going to say, why don't you discharge him? The swelling's down, the strength is back, the range of motion is full. And you say, well, you know, they still limp when they walk. A lot of people don't get what I'm saying there, but many people know the kid that's had the really bad lower extremity injury, and after that leg is 100%, you can test every muscle in that leg, you can test every joint for range of motion in that leg, you can look for trigger points, abnormalities, asymmetries, the leg is normal, the kid still limps. This is a statement we see popping up time and time again, and it is the conditioning and rehabilitation professional who understands if the central nervous system doesn't recognize the normalcy that I created, then nothing really matters. If your software in your brain does not acknowledge the change in hardware, the better moving joint, the more elastic muscle, the better firing pattern between your stabilizers and prime movers, it doesn't matter. If you don't take the time to reload the software in the original formula, then you're almost like the computer guy who's replacing all the parts on your computer but doesn't reboot, who doesn't reset, who doesn't reload clean software. He just loads back on the viruses that probably caused your hard drive to crash in the first place. And that doesn't make a lot of sense, so we got to get those movement patterns right. So he wants to know, when he's doing the functional movement screen, either training somebody or doing the movement screen at the end of the rehab. Obviously, if somebody's already got a painful ankle, you don't do the movement screen, you do a full assessment. But you start doing the movement screen halfway through the rehab when the ankle's better, trying to make sure that the ankle hasn't caused problems elsewhere. Okay, having said that, he wants to know, subsequent RNT training, which stands for reactive neuromuscular training, and that's a philosophy that we published on way back in 1996 that said if movement is clean, and they're still not moving well, meaning they've got no range of motion or tight muscle reason for not moving well, they're just not moving well, then actually we know it's a stability problem. How do you train stability? Well, it ain't by doing side planks for a day and a half, and it ain't by, you know, doing single leg stance drills. It's actually by doing the pattern that creates the problem. Say that pattern's a squat or a lunge. If you notice pronation and valgus collapse of the knee, what do? We take a small piece of band and use just enough inward pull. We pull you back to the midline. Okay, so if it's your left knee, we pull you to the right. We cave your left knee in a little bit more. We exaggerate the biomechanical mistake. And in doing so, we make the mistake so obvious that even a bad piece of software in your brain recognizes and said, if that knee goes any further, we're going down. I got to go into protection mode. I got to go into balance mode. I got to go into stability mode. Your brain automatically realizes that the task here is not the lunge or the squat. The task here is maintaining alignment during the lunge and squat. We found a long time ago that coaching that verbally gives you laryngitis and the person you're coaching frustration. But coaching it proprioceptively, using the movement to exaggerate the mistake so that they self-correct, is the way we get people back to reflex stabilization in the first place. And let's be honest, stabilizers don't need to be trained like prime movers. Stabilizers can never be stronger than prime movers, so the only way stabilizers can exist in an environment where muscles that are stronger than them are there and present is to fire first and establish joint alignment and proper axis, and then control the roll, slide, and glide of a joint as the prime mover exerts its force onto that joint. If that stabilizer doesn't do its job first, movement is bad. Prime movers will try to create movement as well as give you some degree of stability. But what you will see is poor alignment. You'll see an inappropriate pelvic tilt, a valgus collapse, a pronation, a rounded back. You'll see all those things that we try to coach out of an individual, and what you're really seeing is not a tight muscle, it's the lack of a stabilizer doing its job, which could very easily perpetuate muscle tightness in a prime mover that's working way more than it should, both as a role as a stabilizer and prime mover. So what he's asking is, how do you determine the frequency? Because this person asking this question already gets the fact that we do RNT. Even if it ain't the one you want to work on, you got to work on it, because everything else is revolving around that. All the other movement problems you see are unnecessary noise. But if you're trying to figure out where the rock went in the water, look where all the ripples come out from. And that's where we got to work. So it may not be your preferred. You may want to help somebody squat. But the best way to do that may be able to correct their push-up first, if that movement pattern's more deficient. Okay? Now, his question is, frequency of exercise. How often do we do the movement pattern? Well, here's my thing. If the movement pattern is out, RNT and the mobility and stability prep before we do RNT is all you do for that pattern. Because if that pattern's not correct, we can't exercise it. We would end up reinforcing a bad pattern. Now, you can work the other clean movement patterns. If somebody's lunge is not adequate, but their push-ups and their shoulder mobility are great, keep hammering the upper body. Keep doing the push-ups and the shoulder mobility. No bad can come of that. There's no reason to compensate. There's no reason to decline. But if you rehearse that lunge, you perpetuate the mistake, you reinforce the mistake. The sheer fact that you're going through repetitions aren't keeping the glute from atrophying. They're basically feeding a bad piece of software that doesn't know how to lunge in the first place. So I do it every chance I get, and also prescribe at least one RNT move to be done when they're on their own. Now, when I suggested this in the personal training industry, it was basically, you know, like I said, let's go out to their local SPCA and kill kittens and puppies. I mean, they're like, wait a minute. We make money by exercising people. The last thing we want to advocate is people exercising on their own. I'm like, come on. Let them do the remedial stuff on their own, so when they come back to you, they're moving cleaner, so you can really do some stuff. That's my thing. So I do it as much as possible. And this came from my sort of training in the trenches. When I get a pro athlete who would come and train with us, I only got him for about 3 days. If I don't change the most limited or asymmetrical movement pattern, I don't work again for at least that particular team, and word gets around quick, so I probably don't work for others either. We got to make a change in the movement screen. And I don't do that by worrying about, hey, I'm missing squat day, or hey, they're not getting upper body training. My point is, once the screen identifies the weakest link, working on any other link in the chain will not effectively change the strength of the chain. Hammer the weak link, even if you've got to fight boredom, whining, and complaining. Doing the right thing is often not rewarded. As a matter of fact, I always say at the end of our lectures, no good deed ever goes unpunished. And when you start screening people, they're going to bring a whole list of questions, why they can't do this and why they shouldn't do this. And, you know, if you'll see, I just basically have a recording in my head. I push play, and then I go kayak somewhere in my imagination while they hear the same thing they should have probably read in my book. But anyway, we want to stay on that as much as possible. We don't even look at the corrective strategy under the same guise of exercise. We hammer the corrective strategy until we see a budge in the movement pattern. If we don't see a budge, we make sure we're on the right pattern. We go back, clean the soft tissue. We don't resist the movement. We don't pull the knee in to create strength in the glute medius. We pull the knee in just to create the proprioceptive awareness that malalignment's occurring. And when we do that, we notice that the movement cleans itself up. So we see the movement actually get better with that little valgus collapse or that little shoulder dip or whatever thing that we cause with our band or tubing. The movement gets better, and then we have them do at least about 4 reps of that. And when they do about 4 reps of that, we give them a rest break, we go work on mobility again, and we come back to it. And I'm serious, it's the tortoise and the hare all over again. We do start slow. We do start laser on the movement pattern problem, because we've learned over time and time again, life teaches through mistakes, that when we try to honor the rest of the workout, when we try to make sure that people get a quote-unquote good workout on top of their corrective strategy, it's like watering down their medication. Any movement you do that makes them go into their compromise will only reinforce the bad and negate the good thing that you've done. So, you know, if you'll hit corrective strategy every time you see them, for a while. Do the normal workout stuff that doesn't perpetuate bad movement. But if you'll hit that thing every time you see them and then give them something to work on at home and recheck that when they walk in the door, because I never take anybody's word for it. Hey, did you do the corrective strategy? Oh, yeah, I did that. Show it to me. The proof's in the pudding. If they're not moving better, they're not doing it, or they're not doing the right exercise. So frequency, as much as you can possibly do till both of you grow completely bored and change the movement screen, at which time the screen will tell you the next place to go. Always go with the most limited or asymmetrical movement pattern. And if there are more than one, go with the one that seems most primitive or easiest to correct and move on from there. I think you'll find that there's a lot of learning to be gained, a lot of awareness that can be gained by staying on those patterns and watching how quick they change when that's all you focus on. Because really, the weak link is your only job. Entertainment, yeah, there's an entertainment factor. If you're in personal fitness or conditioning, you got to keep them entertained. But I won't let their need to be entertained and have variety in their workout circumvent my need to change their screen. Because when it's all said and done, you're paid for your results, not your entertainment value. All right, this is Gray Cook. Come see us, functionalmovement.com. Thanks.